Welcome to Mama Tales, a podcast on our collective motherhood journey. I'm your host, Sally Kuria. Here's a big welcome to everyone who's recently started listening to the podcast. I appreciate you. New episodes drop every Tuesday morning and we have over 50 episodes now, so do enjoy the binge session. I also send out a newsletter every other week that covers ideas, thoughts, and highlights from my life and this community. So if you'd like a bit of what's coming your way, join us on the website or on the link shared in the show notes of the episode. It is open to contributors, so if you'd like to write about something that matters to you, please let me know. It is a new year and a new phase for the podcast. I have quite a lot lined up, things that are making me quite excited, and I cannot wait to share them with you. To keep updated, please keep up with me on social media at Mama Tales Podcast on TikTok and Insta, as well as on the newsletter. If there is a conversation or topic you'd like me to cover here, there is a form that you can use to share that with me, and you can also sign up to be a storyteller. I built this platform to form a community that mothers can use to lean upon each other, to uplift each other through our shared experiences. We have done a lot so far, and I know we can do even more. So I appreciate every single one of you for being here and helping this be what it is. We all carry some type of scar or trauma from our upbringing. Our parents were not perfect. No one really is, and some of these imperfections created environments or situations that might have negatively impacted our childhood and ultimately influenced the adult that we grew up to become. This is exactly what happened to Gina, who has shared her story with us in this episode. Here's a bit of what's coming up.
So I basically had a difficult childhood. I was the only child of two parents who were stuck in a deeply unhappy marriage. There was a lot of violence at home, mental, physical, emotional. And most of the violence wasn't directed towards me, but as a child living in this toxic and dysfunctional household, I was obviously impacted.
Before we get into that episode, I want to kick off this episode by sharing a highlight of the week. It's been a minute since we did this, but essentially it's this nugget of time where we look back at the week to find moments that brought us joy in our parenting journey. And you know, might make the rough parts a little less rough. My highlight this past week was taking my kids to Nairobi's animal orphanage. This was the second time I think we went there, and it was so different. I think with kids this young, it's really cool to see how they respond or react to experiences like this as they grow older and become more aware. My daughter was really excited to go back and see Tausi, that's a peacock. This bird left a very big impression on her the first time because obviously, you know, display of, is it tails or feathers or crown? I don't know what you call that thing at the back. But it also made really loud sounds. So that's exactly what she wanted to see. We got there, we saw one. It didn't really do any of that. So she kind of moved on really quickly. But she was also very excited to see all these animals that resembled her stuffed ones at home. So we saw a lion, we saw the monkey. But we did struggle when she wanted to see Yogurt. So Yogurt is a stuffed animal that a friend brought her, and It has the stripes of a zebra, I think, but it sits down like how you'd make a cat sit down. So it looks like a tiger. Maybe it's a tiger. I don't know. So it was hard trying to explain to her that Yogurt isn't here. And that was not a fun conversation. That's all I'll say. All in all, they really enjoyed themselves. My son is still not super bothered by it. He's 1.5, so I think he still has time to get fully acquainted with everything that was going on. But it was truly a great afternoon spent. I think I'll create a highlight of it and some reels on my personal Instagram. So feel free to check that out on Sally Mogore. Do you have a highlight you'd like to share with us? Check out the show notes to see how. Our storyteller today is Gina, and I met her on Instagram. Back then, her page was all on introducing solace to her daughter, and she was doing baby-led weaning, an approach to weaning that is child-led and focuses a lot on self-feeding. I hadn't seen a lot of Kenyans do it, so I appreciated someone sharing the experience because I was preparing to go through the same thing with my daughter. Over time, I grew to appreciate her parenting style. I would describe it as intentional, patient, observant, and most importantly, child-led. It seemed to come naturally to her. Given what I'd seen, I had no idea how difficult her childhood was.
So I often allude to my childhood, but I haven't really shared a lot about it. So this is actually going to be a first, but I think it is time. So I basically had a difficult childhood. I was the only child of two parents who were stuck in a deeply unhappy marriage. There was a lot of violence at home, mental, physical, emotional. And most of the violence wasn't directed towards me. But as a child living in this toxic and dysfunctional household, I was obviously impacted. I do have happy memories as well from my childhood, especially of outside my home, but they are largely overshadowed by the difficult ones. In terms of the positives, I grew up in Muscat, in Oman, so I really loved the multicultural, diverse environment that I was exposed to. I think it opened up my mind to different realities and shaped my worldview and perspective. I formed strong friendships, and even today I am in touch with a lot of my childhood friends, and they play an important role in my life even today. I've been in and out of therapy for about 10 years, mostly out, but now I'm back in. And it's only recently that I learned that what I experienced in childhood was emotional neglect. And neglect is a strong word. And I was also skeptical when I heard it at first, because I thought, but I'm here today and I'm fine, you know, quote unquote, I'm fine. So could it really have been neglect? Because we tend to think of neglect in terms of physical needs, right? So when your basic physical needs aren't met, we think that that's neglect. But actually, now knowing what I know now, sustained emotional neglect is a result of, or rather emotional neglect is a result of sustained disregard of the emotional needs of a child over time. So it becomes neglect. And once I became a parent, a lot of unprocessed feelings and emotions started coming up. Some of them physical, as in I would have a physical reaction in my body in response to something that my children said or did. And my reaction was very disproportionate in comparison to what had just happened. So it could have been some crying, some whining, hitting, or specific behaviors. And the reaction that I had was really quite extreme compared to what it should have been. So I realized that I wasn't okay. Yeah. And that I would really need to work on myself and become intentional about not passing down that generational trauma. So, yes, I'm working hard on myself and on healing and trying to give my children what I didn't have. That is a safe, loving, peaceful home with calm, caring, and emotionally regulated adults.
With all that trauma, I couldn't help but wonder if she had any doubts on becoming a mom in the first place.
Yeah, I think that I don't think it was part of my life plan, I would say. Not that it wasn't, but it wasn't something that I really aspired to. Similarly to marriage as well, it wasn't something that I idealized or that I really held so sacred or so important, because I just seen how shitty it could be. So I was really focused on more like academics and, you know, my career and being, you know, independent financially and just focusing on myself. And I guess that's when good things sort of start happening to you, when you're not really like maybe seeking them out, so to speak. And then I met my husband, we got married, and we decided to wait for a couple of years before we started trying to have children. And yeah, I got pregnant pretty quickly after we tried. But I, at that point, I didn't doubt that I wasn't ready. I felt very ready, both like mentally as well as, you know, biologically, I felt ready. But then once my daughter was born, I think a lot of all of the things that I had prepared for kind of just flew out of the window. And, you know, when you're faced with like a crying, screaming newborn and you have no idea what you're doing wrong, and it brings up like a lot of emotions, feelings. I think definitely there was some like postpartum depression, anxiety there. And I did doubt myself, and I did have those feelings of like, of doubting, you know, my worth as a person, as a mother. But yeah, I think I was able to heal, and I think I'm still in the process, but I think now I don't doubt whether I am a good enough mother or whether I, you know, am worthy enough for all of those things. It's just about continuing to work on myself so that I'm able to be the best version of myself and then show up as the best version to them. And really not pass down a lot of my own like insecurities and trauma. Yeah.
We will take a quick break here. And when we're back, we will get into Gina's intentional parenting journey with a look on how she approached some common issues like sleep, food, and, you know, multiple kids. Welcome back. Today, we are listening to Gina, a mom of two who is navigating parenting like all of us, and her way of doing it is through intentional parenting. I asked her what that meant to her.
So it's been almost 4 years since I've been a parent, a mother. And now when I look back at it, I didn't set out to parent this specific way. So I didn't think that, right, I had a terrible childhood. You know, I have lots of trauma. Let me do ABC so that my children will be fine. You know, I wasn't making those connections, but I was just thinking that, I was just curious, you know. I wanted to know more, and I wanted to learn more and understand child development, and really help myself, help my children go through childhood and go through what they're experiencing. So, it began with that's how it began, but now when I look back at it, I realize that of course there must have been something internally, and you know, the fear of not giving them the best, that was pushing me forward as well. So to me, intentional parenting means really thinking through the parenting choices and decisions that you're making. So one thing that my husband and I did was you know, sit down and like have a conversation about what are our values, family values, like what do we want to pass down to our children from our own childhoods, what do we want to leave behind. And we have a really great example in his family, in terms of how he was raised, him and his siblings. So there's lots that we have that we want to also pass down. So really being intentional and conscious about the way and the direction that we want to parent, and making sure that we're both on the same page, and that we are a team, and understanding why. So are these decisions based in science? Are they based in evidence? What is, you know, the research telling us? So what is our intuition, our instinct telling us, and how have we parented as a society or our ancestors? So kind of taking into consideration these three different aspects of it, and then deciding what's best for us and our family, and then continuously learning and unlearning, and undertaking the self-work, you know, the transformation, the inner transformation, and being open to making mistakes, apologizing to your children, you know, learning from them, growing with them, and really finding joy in parenting.
Intentional parenting can manifest in a lot of different ways. A lot of it comes down to how we handle normal day-to-day things with our kids, like sleep and food.
So my basic approach now, when I started 4 years ago, it was different. I was also learning, but over time I have found the different approaches that are the right fit for us as a family, for us as the adults, but also for my children. And that's very much taking on from the Montessori approach to parenting. Of course, it is an educational approach in its essence, but it's also a way of life. It's also philosophy. And it holds most important the respect for the child, for each individual child, and believing that each child is a full and complete human being when they come into this world, and that we don't need to mold them, we don't need to train them, we don't need to change them in any way, that they come as they are and they come perfect. And so really looking at the child in front of you, because of course they're all different, and that's something that no one tells you before your baby is born, that all babies come into this world with different temperaments, and what works for one might not work for the other. And that's why a lot of the advice and a lot of the information that you get out there and that you read, it's probably tailored to the average baby, or the temperament, you know, generally easygoing temperament. And if you have a baby that's a bit more sensitive or has different needs, then it's very difficult to follow what these books and this guidance is telling you. And then somehow you start doubting yourself, start doubting your baby. What's wrong with me? Why can't I do this? Why can't my baby do this? But so-and-so said that theirs is doing that, and they're sleeping through the night by 6 months, etc., etc. So since those early days and early months, and after I really found my feet and I found the sources of information and inspiration, I've become much more confident in my own abilities and confident in my baby's abilities, in the sense that babies know how to sleep. They know when they are sleepy. They know when they are hungry. They will let us know their needs. And really, it's about us taking a few steps behind, pausing, watching, observing for different sleep cues or hunger cues, and then responding calmly without, you know, panic or chaos. So I've learned that over time. And I would say with my second baby, our approach is completely relaxed, in the sense that I was clearing out some drawers yesterday, and I found this book where I used to write down each and every the time of each feed that my eldest took, and from which side, and how much she drank, and, you know, like all of these detailed notes. She did have some trouble gaining weight as well, so it made me more anxious. But obviously, it was way too much. And with this baby, I have no idea when, like, what time she's sleeping, when, you know, when she's woken up, like when she's hung. I'm not obsessively documenting anything. I'm just going with the flow. I'm observing her and then responding to her cues. But of course, you know, we do have a strong family rhythm, in the sense that we know what comes next. Or babies, and I think babies very early on, they are also able to predict what comes next, and this helps them then settle into you know, certain regular patterns and rhythms, and they have positive sleep associations, etc. So we have those strong rhythms. It's not a routine, it's not a schedule, it doesn't go by the clock, but it just goes with the natural sort of flow of our days and weeks, which is fairly consistent, fairly predictable. And overall, haven't been too many challenges. I also just didn't bother with a crib this time around. My eldest never slept in a crib, so I was like, I'm not blowing another, you know, 25 grand on a crib which no one is going to use. I also don't have the space. So and my husband was anyway sleeping with my elder child, who needs support when she wakes in the night. So they have like two mattresses on the floor in their room, and so I was sleeping in our master bedroom, and so now baby just sleeps there with me, and that's like the solution that works for all of us. She wakes a couple of times at night, she nurses, and then goes back to sleep, as is the biological norm and what we've been doing for hundreds and thousands of years, probably. So, yeah, so it's really like a more relaxed and a no stress approach to it this time. Yeah. Yeah, with my eldest, I remember lots of difficult nights. But it was okay. But I feel like that's what, you know, if you, that's time gives us that perspective. Yes. Like, you know, when you're in the thick of it, in that moment, you feel like it's never going to end. You know, she's never going to sleep. But with the second child, you know that there, you know, there, this is normal. Babies, this is how babies sleep. And this is, it's going to end, right? It's going to get better. It's not going to, she's not going to be waking up 5 times a night forever. So that perspective of that, you know, that children are in different stages of development. They evolve, they, you know, they change, and that's totally okay. And actually, that's to be celebrated and welcome that they're growing and they're developing. So that gives you some perspective, I guess, and it helps not to be as obsessed about it. Yeah, and I feel like generally in our cultures, in you know, the global South, I don't feel like we're very obsessed with sleep. You know, I just feel like it's a very, you know, American, European kind of thing where people are more obsessed about sleep, in the sense that people like colleagues and, you know, friends, you know, will ask, okay, so how's the baby sleeping? How's the baby sleep? Whereas I feel like my family or people like friends from here or from India, like they never ask about how's the baby sleeping. They usually ask how's the baby feeding, because that's kind of more, you know, important in the sense like, are they able to grow? Do you have like enough milk? Are they... And also because we've had this whole history of like malnutrition and infant mortality and all of that stuff. So I think that's why, you know, how's the baby feeding is more important. And whereas with sleep, everybody's like, yeah, sure, babies will sleep when they want to sleep, you know, it's just biological and that's how it is. And then also linked to that is like, you know, having that, making sure you have enough support. So typically they will ask you like, do you have enough help? Should we send someone? Like, you know, how are you managing? So understanding very much that it's not just the mother's responsibility to do like every single thing, but that feeding is probably what, you know, biologically becomes most important for her, and then taking care of herself, resting, and then having like a circle of support around her who can then do the other things for the baby. I think I was like, as I mentioned, struggling quite a bit initially when she was born. So for like the first 6 months, I was, it was tough. And then when we introduced solids, it was like this really exciting time. So before introducing solids, I kind of, you know, tried to understand, okay, how do I do this now? You know, it's a whole new world no one really prepares you. Well, I think people just prepare you for giving birth. Like beyond that, it's just like, okay, here's your baby, go forth and prosper. You may prosper, you may not, but you'll figure it out. So yeah, so but then I started reading on different approaches. I found baby-led weaning. I was like, huh, that's interesting. Babies can feed themselves, like, wow, what a, you know, I'd never seen that before, and I'd never it was a bit bizarre to me, the concept initially, and I thought like, okay, maybe this is just like a white people thing, like, you know, like is it gonna work, like maybe it's not, you know, or maybe it's like, you know, only their food, like it can only work with their food, like you know, that sort of thing. But then we like kind of adapted some of the main principles that that I read about, and you know, introduced like food that we were generally eating anyway, and with our like our spices and everything, and like it was really amazing again to see, to kind of witness what babies are really capable of. And yeah, I think I've been constantly like blown away in terms of both like when you think of even the first year of their life, like how they go from, you know, being this tiny newborn, incapable of really doing very much, to like by 1 year of age, like walking, talking, feeding themselves, like doing so much over that, you know, 1 year of their life. And I've learned to just, you know, just allow it to unfold as naturally as possible with as less interference from adults as possible. So even when it comes to feeding, so, you know, allowing them to explore the tastes, get messy, you know, have that full like sensory experience, which is so much more than food. It's also trusting a child's ability to know when they're hungry, when they're thirsty, when they're full. So it's really, you know, handing over that trust to the child, which is quite a big thing. It's quite a big shift from, you know, how we were introduced to food and, you know, how much of a stress it has been, like culturally, the emphasis on, you know, how much is a child eating, how, you know, are you feeding them well, and all of those things, finish the plate, you know, all of that, the drama and the stress around mealtime. So it was quite revolutionary, like, to actually take all of that away and put that, your trust in the child. So I loved that part of it. And you know, it extends to other aspects also, which I'm learning this time around a lot about, like natural gross motor development, which is really, you know, allowing your baby to move by themselves. So whether it's turning over, whether it's sitting up, whether it's, you know, flipping, crawling, standing, holding to stand. So just letting them figure it out themselves instead of us needing to intervene and, you know, hold them up or sit them up or put them in some kind of containers, etc. So it's really, I guess, a simple way of doing things. Like it may seem complicated online and on social media, and we have like so much of information, but I think that's the beauty of understanding or learning, reading more about child development, is you understand what children really need, you know, which is to have physical needs, to have unconditional love, to have respect, to have trust, to have their emotional needs validated, to have a responsive caregiver, and I think that's it, you know. Like all of the other stuff, the bells and whistles, you know, the helicopter parenting, like I think they would be better off maybe without it. So yeah, it's kind of just stripping back a lot, and going back a little bit to maybe how we were raised in terms of, in some ways, but then also quite differently than from how we were raised in other ways. So yeah.
That's it for this week's episode, and thanks Gina for taking the time to sit with me. She is a mom of two girls and an international development expert. She is also the founder of Our Practical Life, a community that promotes intentional parenting, child-led learning, and development. And we're actually not done with Gina's story and experiences. Next week, we will get into an episode that touches a bit on education, her perspective on that, and what that means for her little ones. I thought it would be best to pick it up in a different episode, so that's gonna come your way next week. I would really love it if you check out her work as well. There's a link to her website in the show notes, as well as a link to her socials, which I highly recommend you check out. Recently, she has been a great voice against the genocide in Palestine and the atrocities committed against the people and especially their children. I learned a lot about what's going on there and the efforts on advocating for ceasefire through her. What is happening in Palestine, in Sudan, is horrible, and it sucks to see innocent children bear the brunt of it. I hope that this year has been treating you well so far. I am still carrying this awful cold, but I hope things will look up soon, because this is the longest I've been sick. Anyway, catch you then. Bye.